This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Hadith we believe in, the judgment comes from the specialist in hadith, and not from other people. Not from people of fiqh, who are not specialists in hadith. Not from people of fiqh, not from people of tafsir, but people who are specialists in hadith. And of course, two of the most well-known, famous scholars of hadith are Imam al-Bukhari and Imam Muslim. Well, Hamid has asked me today to speak about the place of these two in Islam, and unfortunately, and some of the areas I'll go through rather quickly. Let me just point out by saying that, of course, Imam Bukhari, al-Bukhari wa Imam Muslim, at the time they were living, they were considered perhaps the greatest scholars of hadith at that time. Imam al-Bukhari, for example, from the time that he was young, he was known for his knowledge, for his memory. One time when he was 11 years old, he was listening to one of the shaykh of hadith reading, narrating some hadith, and he corrected the shaykh. The shaykh was a little bit surprised why this young young man was correcting him. He said, to put it in English, he told him, "What's your problem?" That's for you, Mikael. The Imam al-Bukhari, the young Imam al-Bukhari, told him that you made a mistake in the narration of this hadith. In the chain you made a mistake. You mixed two narrators. And of course the Sheikh was a little bit surprised by the brashness of this young man. So Imam al-Bukhari told him that if you have the book with you, or the recorded usul, the original, then go back and look at it. So the Sheikh went to his house and looked at it, and he found that Imam al-Bukhari was correct. Also, Imam al-Bukhari was tested by many scholars and his youth to see if in fact he was proficient in hadith. When he first came to Baghdad, young man, at that time the scholars of hadith, when they're young, they travel throughout the Muslim world collecting hadith from different scholars, and then they settle in an area and they teach the hadith that they know. So when he came to Baghdad, he was well known already, and the scholars of hadith there decided to test him. So in a public gathering, 10 scholars from Baghdad, each one of them read 10 hadith to Imam al-Bukhari. And after each hadith that they read to al-Bukhari, he said, "I don't know this hadith. I don't know this hadith." Well, the people, they started thinking that, well, maybe this person isn't what he was advertised to be. So after they were finished reading, and what they did is they were testing by al-Bukhari by giving the hadith with the wrong isnad. And they would say the hadith with the wrong isnad. So al-Bukhari said, "I don't know this hadith. This not is the chain of transmitters." So when they were finished, 10 scholars narrating 10 hadith, that's 100 hadith. When they're all finished, and he said, "I don't know to all of them," he told him, "I will tell you the hadith that I know." So he read back all 100 hadith with the correct isnad. So the scholars of Baghdad, they knew that, and he knows what he's talking about. Well, Imam Muslim also, we can give some of the same stories about Imam Muslim, but we will not do to my claim that I want to catch. With respect to Imam al-Bukhari, he said that I have memorized 100,000 hadith which are authentic and 100,000 hadith which are not authentic. Now you have to keep in mind that the scholars of hadith, they count hadith not by the statements of the Prophet ﷺ, but they count hadith by the isnad, or by the different chains. So when Imam al-Bukhari said that I memorized 100,000 authentic hadith, it doesn't mean 100,000 different statements of the Prophet ﷺ, but it means 100,000 hadith with different isnads. And also Imam Muslim, he said that his collection, Sahih Muslim, was gathered from 300,000 hadith that he had heard. The reason I mentioned that point is because when we talk about Sahih Bukhari and Sahih Muslim, we should not think about it as someone collecting some hadith and these are the hadith that he found and he put it into a book. And this is not the nature of Sahih Bukhari and Sahih Muslim. What it is, in fact, is two scholars who knew many hadith. And from those many hadith, they chose just a few, yani the top, the epitome of those hadith, and put it into a collection. As I said, the Al-Bukhari said he knew 100,000 hadith which are authentic. If you go to Sahih Bukhari, even if you count the hadith with repetitions, there's only about 7,000 hadith. So what he's doing is he's taking the cream of the crop, as you say. So he's not just someone gathering hadith together and he found like 3,000 authentic hadith and he recorded all 3,000 or 7,000 in a book. But he knew many, many authentic hadith and he's just taking from the top level. As he said himself, he said that everything I have included in this book, Al-Jama', is authentic, and what I have not included of authentic hadith is much more. On another occasion he said, if it were not to make the book too long, I would have recorded many other hadith. Well, also Imam Muslim, the same situation. If you go to Kitab Salat, the book of prayer in Sahih Muslim, the chapter on Tashahud, there is a hadith in there, after which the Imam Muslim recorded the hadith, and then he recorded one of his students asking him, what about the hadith of Abu Huraira that says that when the Imam recites the Quran, you should be silent? So Imam Muslim said that, I believe that hadith is authentic, and in my opinion that hadith is authentic, but I do not include all of the authentic hadith in this book. But I'm only including those hadith which there is agreement upon that they are authentic. So again, we're talking about someone, scholar of hadith, just taking the cream of the crop, the best hadith that he knows, and putting it into a collection. In fact, the title of Al-Bukhari's collection points that out. The name of the book actually is Al-Jama' Al-Sahih Al-Musnad Al-Mukhtasar من أمور رسول الله وسننه وآيامه. يعني المختصر يعني he is just it's an abridgment. It's not all the authentic hadith, but he is just choosing the best that he knows. And as I said, or as I alluded to, it is not even just the hadith that Al-Bukhari thinks is authentic and that Imam Muslim thinks are authentic, but these are hadith that all of the scholars of hadith at that time agreed upon. Al-Imam al-Bukhari, he took his book to four scholars, to more than four scholars, including Ahmad ibn Hanbal, the teacher, Yahya ibn Ma'in, also the teacher, and Ibn Abu Shayba, and Ali ibn al-Madina, and other scholars. He took his book, Sahih al-Bukhari, to all these scholars, and they agreed on all of the hadith in Sahih al-Bukhari except for four hadith. Well, it's not clear whether he deleted those four hadith or not. But the point is that he took it to these great scholars of hadith, and they all agreed with him that all of these hadith are in this book are authentic. And when we say that the others, those four hadith that they did not agree with him on, this might mean they didn't agree with the exact chain that he used, which is something that we might get into in a few minutes. Also, Imam Muslim, as I said, he only recorded those hadith that the scholars were agreed upon are correct. In other words, he only included the hadith that Ahmed ibn Hanbal, Sa'id ibn Mansur, Ibn Abi Shayba, and scholars like that agreed with. And he took his book, Sahih Muslim, to Abu Zur'a. And I just took the book from Muhammad Hassan about Abu Zur'a. He's one of the greatest scholars in hadith, especially when it comes to defects in hadith. The topic of ilal. Well, ilal is one of the most difficult topics in hadith, and it is referring to hidden defects in the hadith. Defects that you cannot see unless you gather together all the chains of a specific hadith and study it very closely, and then you can find some hidden defects. So Imam Muslim, he took his book to Abu Zur'a, and he told Abu Zur'a to go over the book, and any hadith that Abu Zur'a had any question about, then he just deleted it from the book. And not because he didn't consider it authentic necessarily, but because he wanted to make sure that the book is above any question. Also, with respect to Sahih al-Bukhari, Imam al-Bukhari finished, it took him about 16 years to write Sahih al-Bukhari. And it took Imam Muslim about 15 years to write Sahih Muslim. With respect to Imam al-Bukhari, before he put any hadith into Sahih al-Bukhari, he used to make wudu and make Salat al-Istikhara before entering any hadith into his collection. And he finished his book many years before his death. So he read his book to 9,000 of his students, I mean the entire Sahih al-Bukhari. And this is a period, and it was many years. And this long period also was an opportunity for, if there's any mistakes in Sahih al-Bukhari, he's reading it to 9,000 students, some of them younger than him, some of them older than him, some of them his shuyukh, his teachers. So this gave a chance that if there's any mistakes still present in Sahih al-Bukhari, that they will be able to point it out and notice it. What we conclude with concerning the Sahih al-Bukhari and Sahih Muslim, and as I said, I'm kind of jumping quickly, going quickly, is that, as I said, these are not just some collections that Imam al-Bukhari, for example, found 7,000 hadith and he put them in his collection. No. He knew a much larger number, but his purpose was to make a collection concerning which there was no doubt about it, that all of these hadith are authentic. In other words, the scholars of hadith at that time were agreed upon that these hadith are authentic. And that brings us to what's the position of the Muslim towards the hadith in Sahih al-Bukhari and Sahih Muslim. First of all of the scholars are agreed that all of the early scholars are agreed that all of the hadith in Sahih al-Bukhari and Sahih Muslim are authentic. Ibn al-Salah in his book Muqaddama fi Ulum al-Hadith, he said that there is ijma' or consensus that all of the hadith in Sahih al-Bukhari and Sahih Muslim are authentic except for a few that have been criticized. And this is also something you should realize about Sahih al-Bukhari and Sahih Muslim. Since the time they wrote it, scholars have been going through it with, like, what we call in English a fine-tooth comb. They've been going through it very carefully. And some scholars have criticized some hadith. But all those scholars who criticized some hadith were responded to by other scholars and shown that the conclusion of Imam Muslim or Imam al-Bukhari was correct. So for example, Ad-Darqutni made some criticism. He's in fact probably the most famous, along with Abu Ali al-Dimashqi wal-Ghassani. Ad-Darqutni, he made some criticisms of Sahih al-Bukhari and Sahih Muslim. His criticisms are of two types. And you'll note that neither one affects actually the authenticity of the hadith. Number one, Ad-Darqutni said, well, if al-Bukhari and Muslim were taking the best hadith, then they should have included these hadith, and he wrote a book that these are some of the hadith that should have been included in Sahih Bukhari and Sahih Muslim. That's one of his criticisms, that they neglected some hadith that they considered to be, that Ad-Darqutni considered to be from the highest level. But that's not a criticism actually, because as I said, neither al-Bukhari or Muslim had the intention to include all authentic hadith in their collection. The second criticism that Ad-Darqutni had, and his second book that he wrote on these on the Sahih al-Bukhari and Sahih Muslim, is that sometimes they would record a specific hadith with a certain chain, and Ad-Darqutni found the same hadith with a better chain. So he's saying that they should have narrated with this chain instead of that chain. So notice that Ad-Darqutni is not saying that those hadith are weak. And the hadith that he criticized, he's not saying that they are weak. But he's basically talking about the isnad, except for, he criticized about 210 hadith, and except for one of them, all of the discussion is about the isnad and the quality of the isnad, and that there's a better isnad that the Bukhari and Muslim should have used. So therefore, the scholars of the hadith, to be very careful, they say that all of the hadith in Sahih al-Bukhari and Sahih Muslim are authentic without any doubt, and they leave some possibility for those hadith which have been criticized. Now, as I started to talk about, this brings us to the point, what should be our view towards Sahih al-Bukhari and Sahih Muslim, towards the two Sahihain. In other words, what is the level of knowledge that it is considered in Islamic law? Is it considered something confirmed like the Quran? Or is it something less than that? If someone says he doesn't believe a hadith in Sahih Bukhari, does this mean that we accept his ijtihad, or does this actually make him to be from amongst Ahlul Bid'ah? So if we study what the ulama said about Sahih Bukhari and Sahih Muslim, what they concluded, is that Sahih Bukhari and Sahih Muslim are two collections of hadith. The ones who collected them claim that all the hadith in this collection are authentic. And the Ummah has accepted their decision. In other words, the scholars, all the scholars of hadith during their time agreed with them. So therefore there's a ijma' or a consensus by the scholars of the hadith. And therefore the Ummah has to follow their ijma'. What that means is that there is ijma' of the Muslim Ummah that all of the hadith in Sahih Bukhari and Sahih Muslim are authentic. So that means that, the, again, still brings us, what does that mean with respect to the level of ilm, the level of knowledge we have to accord these two books. There's two types of ilm, or two levels of ilm al-yaqini. One is ilm al-yaqini al-dururi. If we say that something is ilm al-yaqini al-dururi, for example the Quran, that means that every Muslim has to believe in it without any doubt. I mean, it's something should be obvious to every Muslim. For example, if we say that a Muslim has to pray five times a day, this is considered from those things which are ilm al-yaqini al-dururi, because no Muslim should be ignorant of this fact, and it's well established and there's no question about it. Okay. Mutawatir hadith, hadith which have been narrated by so many people in each chain, are of that type. And most of Sahih Bukhari and Sahih Muslim is actually mutawatir in its meaning. Okay, mutawatir in their meaning. Not necessarily mutawatir in their wording, but mutawatir in their meaning. But there are still some which are not mutawatir. What about these? Well, the next category after that is what they call ilm al-yaqini al-nazari. Well, al-nazari, what this means is that it's not obvious to every Muslim that this is definitive. It needs some evidence, istidlal. It needs some investigation. Okay? And after that investigation is done, then it is concluded that this is ilm al-yaqeen. And that investigation, for example, if there's ijma' of the ummah on something, and it's known that there's ijma' on something, then that thing becomes ilm al-yaqeen al-nazari. So what this means is that we can drop the last two words, Dururi and Nabari, they're not important for us. It means that all of the hadith in Sahih Bukhari and Sahih Muslim are considered by the ulama of hadith and the ulama of usul al-fiqh to be ilm al-yaqini. In other words, every Muslim has to believe in them. Every Muslim has to believe in them and cannot doubt them. As Imam Ibn Taymiyyah said, he quoted the hadith of the Prophet ﷺ, that my ummah la tajtama'a ala dalala, that my ummah will not agree on something which is dalala or something misguided. So he says that since the ummah agrees upon Sahih Bukhari and Sahih Muslim, if anyone doubts these two books, then they are claiming that the ummah is following something which is dalala, and this is unacceptable. And so every Muslim has to believe in the hadith of Sahih Bukhari and Sahih Muslim. Now there's some exceptions to that, and those are those few hadiths that are criticized by Darqutni and others. They are well known amongst the scholars of hadith. And also there's the other exception are what are known in Sahih Bukhari as al-mu'allaqat. We don't have much. This is the time for it. There is no time for it.
Every time we say
mu'allaqat, we spoke of this one. No, last time I discussed. Mu'allaqat are hadith that do not have the complete isnad. Either one half, the first half, or the second half, or the first third, or the last third are missing from the isnad. Well, it's very rare to find this in Sahih Muslim. There's maybe four hadith which are mu'allaq in Sahih Muslim. Now, if we go back to the title of Sahih Bukhari's work, it says, Al-Jama' al-Sahih al-Musnad meaning that every hadith in Sahih Bukhari that has the complete chain, al-musnad means it is muttasil and marfu'. The chain is unbroken and it goes all the way back to the Prophet. So every hadith in Sahih Bukhari, which is as an unbroken chain and goes back to the Prophet, this is Sahih for sure. This is from those which I said are ilm al-yaqini al-nadari. Okay. But unfortunately in Sahih Bukhari, al-Bukhari used a method, or he used al-mu'alaqat a lot. Well, the reason he used al-mu'alaqat is that, well, there's many reasons why he used it. One reason is that sometimes he could not give the whole chain because it was al-Bukhari's style, that he just takes part of the hadith sometimes and put it under a certain chapter. Okay, if there's a long hadith and only part of it is relevant to a certain chapter, he'll just record that part. And he'll record the rest of the hadith some other place. So instead of always putting the complete isnad, he would just put it once, and the rest of the time he would put it in mu'alaq form. Okay? That's one reason he did it. Another reason he did it is because sometimes the hadith does not meet his standards for Sahih al-Bukhari. Okay? The hadith might still be authentic. The hadith might still be Sahih, but it doesn't meet the high standards of Sahih al-Bukhari. So therefore, al-Bukhari records the hadith in mu'alaq form. Well, concerning these hadiths, since Hamid wants me to discuss it, I'm not going to discuss it in detail. We also have to divide these hadiths into two types. One is the type in which the al-Bukhari uses what is known as sighat al-jizm. Yani he uses a definitive term. For example, he uses the term the Prophet ﷺ said, or the Prophet ﷺ did. If he uses these terms, and if he uses what is known as sighat al-jizm, then that hadith is considered authentic in al-Bukhari's eyes. In other words, al-Bukhari, he would not use that form if he did not consider that hadith authentic. So we consider also those hadith authentic. If he uses another form, which is called the sighat al-tamrid, which is similar to the passive voice in English, like it is narrated that the Prophet ﷺ said, or it is narrated the Prophet ﷺ did, okay? This doesn't say anything from al-Bukhari's view. The hadith could still be sahih, it might be da'if. Okay. So you might find hadith which are da'if inside Sahih al-Bukhari. You might find hadith which are weak inside Sahih al-Bukhari. If you do, they will be from the mu'alaqat, and they will be put in the form of sighat al-tamrid. Okay. Most of those hadith are still authentic, that are in that form. But there are few that are da'if, or weak. And usually he puts it in the chapter heading, not actually in the text of the hadith, but he puts the mu'alaqat in the chapter heading. For example, he has a chapter, and this is all there is to the chapter, the heading. It says al-bab, yani chapter, whoever breaks his fast during the day of Ramadan without a valid reason, then he will never be able to make up for it, even if he fasts yani, forever, dhahr, or for a year, as some ulama explained it. This is narrated by other people as a hadith. Al-Bukhari just puts it as a chapter heading and doesn't say it's a hadith anymore. Okay. This particular hadith is da'if. So Al-Bukhari did not mention it and did not give it to Isnad because it is not meeting his standards. So when we say that a Muslim has to believe in all of the hadith of Sahih Bukhari, we are taking out those mu'alaqat. Well, if you do not know which are the mu'alaqat or not, this means you don't have the right to judge al-Bukhari. Of the mu'alaqat. Well, some of the mu'alaqat, they are, the complete chain is found inside Sahih al-Bukhari someplace else. Okay. That's the majority of them. So we're talking about from mu'alaqat from the Prophet ﷺ, from the Tabi'een and from the Sahaba, we're talking about a number around 500. But they are not all hadith of the Prophet ﷺ. As I said, some of them are from the Sahaba and some of them are from the from the Tabi'een. And of those 500, as I said, very few of them are weak. Most of them are sahih or hasan. So the scholars, when they say that this is ilm al-yaqini al-nadri, they are excluding these mu'alaqat of Sahih Bukhari. Or maybe if you need more explanation in the question and answer, we can mention that. Now, as I said, many scholars of hadith or many people have criticized Sahih Muslim and Sahih Bukhari for different reasons. Their criticism can be divided into, the critics can be divided into two categories. One category are those people who have some knowledge about hadith. And the other category are those people who do not have knowledge about hadith. With respect to those people who have knowledge about hadith, I already mentioned Ad-Darqutni and some of the earlier, but their criticism really wasn't a heavy criticism. Ibn Hazm, the one from Spain, my home country, Ibn Hazm, he is one of the people who criticized Sahih Muslim, and he said there are two fabricated hadith in Sahih Muslim. But his claims are very easily refuted. And we have to keep in mind that Ibn Hazm, sometimes his judgment in hadith is not acceptable. Because Ibn Hazm did not travel outside, he did not travel to the eastern part of the Muslim world. In fact, he never made Hajj. That's why if you read Al-Muhalla, his book on Fiqh, he gives some very strange fatwas about Hajj, because he has no idea even what it looks like in Mecca. Also, with respect to hadith, he did not travel to the eastern part of the Muslim world. So therefore, he did not get, there were many hadith that he was not aware of and he did not receive. He even went so far as to say that Abu Isa al-Tirmidhi, everyone here knows Abu Isa al-Tirmidhi? He's the one who compiled Sunnah al-Tirmidhi. Now, does everyone know him? And another one, his name is Al-Baghawi. Al-Baghawi is, he has the famous tafsir. He also collected a large work called Sharh al-Sunnah. He's a very famous scholar of hadith. Ibn Hazm said about both of them that they are majhul. And because he doesn't know them, I never heard of these people, so therefore they are unknown narrators. So sometimes his judgment in hadith is not reliable. More recently though, and perhaps more damaging, are the critiques of, or the criticism of Muhammad Nasruddin al-Albani, especially with respect to Sahih Muslim. Now there's one thing you should keep in mind, and this is amazing that al-Albani does not consider this point. One thing you should keep in mind about Sahih Bukhari and Sahih Muslim, in particular Sahih Muslim, since al-Albani attacked it a lot. Sometimes he takes a hadith and he discusses the isnad, and he says that this isnad is weak because of such and such narrative. Now sometimes he made the mistake that he relied upon one source in his grading of the narrator, and this is a book by Ibn Hajar called and if you don't grade hadith, and as a specialist should, you should not rely on Taqrib al-Tahdeed, because he just gives you a summary. You have to go to other books like Tahdeed al-Tahdeed by Ibn Hajar, because some narrators are acceptable in certain circumstances, but they are not acceptable in others. For example, there is a narrator by the name of Hushain, and there is also Al-Imam al-Zuhri. Hushain is a fiqh, he is trustworthy. You'll find his hadith in Sahih Bukhari and in Sahih Muslim. And al-Zuhri, of course, is very well known as a good scholar of hadith. But in Sahih Bukhari or Sahih Muslim, you'll never find any hadith from Hushain on the authority of al-Zuhri. Because when Hushain studied with al-Zuhri, he was very young. And at that time he was not proficient in hadith. So therefore they do not accept the hadith of Hushain on the authority of al-Zuhri. So sometimes the person is thiqa or trustworthy in himself, but not always. Like as I said in the khatira, so-called khatira ba'd al-fajr, or some people did not believe me when I said what I said. And some narrators, they begin to make ikhtilat, they lost their memory. So they are thiqa for a certain period of time, but after that time, they're no longer considered authentic. So if you have narrators narrating from them after that time, the narration is not acceptable. But if you have narrators narrating from them before that time, their hadith are acceptable. So you cannot go to a book like Taqrib al-Tahdeed and make a serious study of hadith
especially when you're talking about hadith, for example, Sahih Muslim. And this is one of the mistakes that Al-Albani has made with respect to Sahih Muslim. They just took the conclusion of Ibn Hajar without studying the narrators in detail. Another problem, and this is perhaps an even bigger problem, is that many times Imam Muslim did not record the best isnad that he had for the hadith. So Al-Albani today may look at the hadith and he'll look at the isnad and he'll say this isnad is weak, and he'll reject the hadith. This happened during the time of Imam Muslim. Abu Zur'a, the one I referred to earlier, before Imam Muslim gave him the book to review it, he criticized some of the chains in Sahih Muslim. So someone went to Imam Muslim and asked him about it. He said, Abu Zur'a criticized you for using this chain instead of that chain. So Imam Muslim's answer is very, very interesting. There's something, by the way, among the ulama of hadith, they like to have a chain which they call Ali, as opposed to a chain which they call Nabi. Ali means the shortest chain. They like to have the shortest chain because they feel they're closer to the Prophet in that way. And the closer they are to the Prophet, the closer they are in the chain to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the source of the revelation. So when Imam Muslim was asked about some chains that he used, he said that I use those chains in the book because they are shorter, Ali. And I knew that wouldn't harm anything because these hadith are well known amongst the scholars of hadith to be sahih. Now in other words, he knows all the authentic chains, but he didn't record them. Because these hadith are so well known amongst the scholars of hadith to be authentic, that he could put the shorter chain even if it's weaker. Now you have to keep in mind that Al-Bukhari and Muslim, they did not record all of the chains that they knew. The hadith of Innama al-A'mal bi-Niyyat from Umar ibn al-Khattab. After Umar, two links after him is Yahya ibn Sa'id al-Qattan. You'll find the hadith of Innama al-A'mal bi-Niyyat in Sahih Bukhari and Sahih Muslim with 23 different chains. And one of the scholars after them made a collection of all of the chains of this hadith just from Yahya ibn Sa'id al-Qattan. And he said there's more than 700 chains from Yahya ibn Sa'id al-Qattan. But of course al-Bukhari and Muslim are not going to write all 700 chains. Otherwise it's not going to be mukhtasar. No one's going to be able to carry it with them. I mean, that's one of the considerations. So when we look at it now, so many years later, and say, well, look, this hadith, the chain is weak, while Imam Muslim at that time is saying, well, these hadith are so well known that even if we put a weaker chain, it's okay because we want to make the chain shorter. And we have to keep in mind this consideration. So these hadith are the ones that the scholars at that time agreed upon, and we cannot just look at one chain of Sahih Muslim and say that this hadith is weak. Another mistake Al-Albani made is he takes one isnad, which is Al-Layth, عن أبو زبير عن جابر. And there's about 31 hadith in Sahih Muslim with this chain, and he concludes that all of them are weak. The reason he concludes that they are weak is because he says that Abu Zubair is mudallis, and he is someone who uses the term an incorrectly. Now how can I explain that very quickly without what he's saying is that when Abu Zubair says an Jabir, it means he did not hear directly from Jabir. So therefore the chain is broken and we cannot accept it. Now all of the scholars of hadith at that time never included Abu Zubair as someone who commits tablis. Now they were very careful about who commits tablis, and they tried to study and find those narrators who commit tablis. None of them ever mentioned that Abu Zubair is from those people who commit tablis. Until whom? Well, An-Nasa'i is one. He's the only scholar from that time that says that Abu Zubair committed tablis. And this is based on an interpretation of something that he, an incident that he narrated. When Abu Zubair, he gave a book of hadith to another scholar, his name is Shu'bah. He gave him a book of hadith from Jabir. The hadith contains, the book contains 700 hadith from Jabir. This type of giving of hadith is called munawwala, which if you do not give it with permission to narrate the hadith, it is not considered an authentic way to pass on hadith. So he gave him this book, and Shu'bah asked him, did you hear all of these hadith from Jabir? He said, no, some of them I heard directly from him, some from other people. So he told him, okay, tell me which ones you heard directly. So he sat down and he told him. And Masai concludes from this that maybe Abu Zubair commits to this. Well, this is not a clear enough proof because he's not narrating on the authority of Jabir hadith that he did not hear. This is a type of manawala without ijazah, without permission from anyone. The second one to say that Abu Zubair commits to this is Ibn Hazm again. And the third one to say it is Al-Albani. And as I said, he uses this to reject about 31 hadith from Sahih Muslim. We have to keep in mind, as I said, that not all of the chains that they knew are recorded in Sahih Bukhari and Sahih Muslim. There are groups of works known as the type of book is called Mustakhraj. Well, Mustakhraj, what the one who makes Mustakhraj does is, for example, he takes Sahih Muslim and he tries to bring exactly the same hadith through different chains. Either from a Muslim's teacher or his teacher or so forth, back to the Sahaba, back to the Prophet. And there are 25 books of Mustakhraj on the true Sahih. There are 25 different scholars gathered together, different chains, for the same hadith you'll find inside the Bukhari. One of them, in one of those books of Mustakhraj, you'll find 25,000 different chains for the hadith inside one. So when we, nowadays, when we try to criticize, I will conclude, inshallah, and I will forget about the other points that I was going to discuss, because I think I hear them warming up the engine on my train right now. And the things we have to, things we should conclude concerning Sahih Bukhari and Sahih Muslim is that, first of all, our judgment concerning them has to be based on what the scholars of hadith themselves say about it. Well, the scholars of hadith are agreed that all of the hadith in Sahih Bukhari, all of the musnad hadith, we take out the mu'alaqat, all of the musnad hadith in Sahih Bukhari and Sahih Muslim are authentic, and that they are at the level of ilm al-yaqini, either a bururi or a nazari, meaning every Muslim has to believe in them. And as Shah Wali Allah, the muhaddith of India of the last century, he said, if anyone criticizes, you may study the hadith and criticize the hadith as a scholarly work, but he said, he concludes that since there's ijma' on the acceptability of these hadith, and we have lost many of the information that al-Bukhari and Muslim had to grade these hadith as sahih, anyone who considers this, any hadith in there as unauthentic, he is committing a bid'ah and he's not following the way of the believers, in other words, he's not following the ijma'. So I'll pull it for the hadith. Hamid left. Hamid always leaves at the wrong time. Looking for a taxi for me? I hope he has better luck than when I was in Mecca trying to get a taxi to Cairo. There was a question from the sister. Can I say something about the... I'm repeating it.
Do you come in from the
at the wrong time and you come back at the wrong time.
I'm planning to.
Yeah, this is what we assume. But he might be planning on how to delay my trip. You have to. So regarding Riyad al-Salihin, it is not a source book of hadith. What I mean by that, when we talk about the source books of hadith, they are the ones originally collected by scholars of hadith with their chains back to the Prophet. This is a book from a much later scholar, a scholar of hadith, his name is An-Nawi. And what he did is he went through the books of hadith, he went through the source books of hadith, and he collected some hadith. He took from, but not like Hatib al-Layl, and he took very specifically, he took hadith from Sahih Bukhari and Sahih Muslim and Sunan Abu Dawud, and the standard collections of hadith. And he organized them in a way which is very nice, and he put some Quranic verses related to the specific topic. And almost all of the hadith in Riyad al-Salihin are authentic. There's about 20 hadith or so that have been criticized by some scholars, like Al-Arnaud and other scholars. But in general, when you take hadith from Riyad al-Salihin, you can be fairly certain that it's authentic. As I said, Nawawi was one of the great, although he was a later scholar, he was one of the great scholars of hadith. We have about 5 minutes, okay?
Oh, we have about 7 minutes.
I hope the brother who takes me there is going to drive like the brother who brought me here. Not less than 80 miles per hour, regardless of who's in front of you, if there's any. Yeah, you all know the taxicab company that I'm talking about, huh?
I'm asking about those hadiths being to say it in English.
Called weak.
Weakened by Albani. Is this from the Mu'allaqat in Bukhari or some of them from the Musnad? I get confused whether his weak is being confined just to the Mu'allaqat where there is a ground.
The ones I was talking about
and the
are from Sahih Muslim. But Sahih Muslim, as I said, there's only like four hadith which are Mu'allaqat. So he's talking about from the basics of the book. Is criticizing hadith that ulama have agreed upon or are authentic.
Do you recommend all the books of Ibn al-Qayyim to be read?
Ibn al-Qayyim?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Ibn al-Qayyim al-Jawziyyah.
If you're, he has some books which if your Arabic isn't good, you'll still be able to understand them, like Zad al-Ma'ad. He has other books, your Arabic better be good to really understand them.
What is the rest of him?
And he has two styles of writing. I don't know if you noticed this in Ibn al-Qayyim. He has a style which is like his Sheikh Ibn Taymiyyah. Very clear, very simple. You'll find that in Zad al-Ma'ad, I'lam al-Muwaqqi'een, al-Munar al-Nadith. And this is very simple for anyone to read and benefit a lot from. He has another style which is more adib, more literary style. Mm. And also he was influenced by many of the Sufi shuikh that time. So he has also sometimes in writings you have to know what he's talking about to understand. So if your Arabic is good, you will also benefit a great deal from those books. But if you're someone like me, you should stick to the...
are there Rijal Isnad until now having the same characteristics? Yes, are there... Yes.
And it is the...
And you know what's their names or addresses now? Their names.
Whose
names? I mean people now.
People?
Some names about...
The Isnad as a technical way of transmitting hadith, it died out somewhat in the 5th century, but it was still used to pass on books through what is known as ijazah, and I will not go into that in detail. But there's still many hadiths which some scholars have that they've transmitted to their students from the time of the Prophet ﷺ until now. For example, Abdulaziz bin Baz can give you some hadith with this man from himself back to the Prophet. Al-Alawi al-Maliki, the father of the one now in Mecca, he was also a hadith. I believe he's dead now. He also had Isnad from himself back to the Prophet.
Assalamu alaikum.
Inshallah, this is the last question.
Naam, inshallah. I'll make it a quick one. What do you think of the translators who use, I'm speaking of the English translation of Hadith, like Sahih al-Bukhari, who don't use the right Isnad, use the last narrator?
Oh, you mean they cut the Isnad?
Right, they cut it very short. I'm talking about the English version. Is this from the Mu'allaqat? Should we take it authentic or what? You know, for the sake of the English-speaking Muslims, shouldn't the translators use the right isnad instead of the last one?
Yeah, that would be nice. I would not worry too much about mu'allaqat in Sahih al-Bukhari. Listen, mostly they're from the Tab'een, from the Sahaba.
How would we utilize
it? You look at the change.
There's no change in
No, not that there's no chain, but...
sometimes they say...
Well, the best way, by the way, is to look at one of two books, either Fath al-Bari or Tabliq al-Ta'aliq by Ibn Hajar. Both of them are by Ibn Hajar. Tabliq al-Ta'aliq, Ibn Hajar took all the mu'allaqat out of Sahih al-Bukhari and he put them into one collection and he discussed all of them in that book. It's five volumes, published now, five volumes, but you cannot count the first one because it's the life of Ibn Hajar and the life of Al-Bukhari. But there's four volumes and he discusses all of them. Otherwise, in Fath al-Bari, when he discusses the hadith, also he discusses them. And so for those of you who have access to Arabic, it says inshallah no problem. The work of Suyuti, who has written on almost every topic under the sun. If you go to Muhammad Tuqan, he can give you, mashallah, books from Suyuti. You cannot imagine anyone even thinking of writing on these topics. Lakin in Hadith, he was, he wasn't very strict when it came to grading Hadith. So in other words, if Suyuti says the Hadith is Sahih or Hasan, it may not actually be Sahih Hasan, because he was a little bit less. But if he says it's Da'if, then most likely it is Da'if. Subhani is similar.
How about when we use the Hadith, should we...
Before you ask, let me say Salaamu Alaikum to you all now, so I have a free way to the car.
Okay, have a nice trip. I'm planning on buying Albani. Do you recommend or not using the Albani Silsilat al-Hadith Sahiha and Silsilat al-Hadith?
You don't want to ask Muhammad Tuqan for the...
He probably would say yeah. But do you recommend taking Albani seriously, and if not, which source we should use to pinpoint the weakened Hadith? I think it's important to separate the weakened Hadith from the strong Hadith.
I think there's no question that Muhammad Nasir al-Din al-Albani is the greatest Muhaddith alive today. There's no question about that. And he, just because he has some mistakes, especially with respect to Sahih al-Bukhari, he has also some other mistakes in other of his works. No, but it's according to the Ummah, that all of the Hadith in Sahih al-Bukhari and Sahih Muslim are authentic. He is going against the Ijma' actually. He has another characteristic which isn't very good on his part, is he has a tendency sometimes to rely on manuscripts that have not really been certified to be authentic. And he uses lots of manuscripts sometimes, which the other scholars are not familiar with, and they're not sure whether those manuscripts are sound. But in general, his grading of hadith is in accordance with most of the ulama, and he doesn't disagree with the ulama in general, except for when it comes to these hadith in Sahih Muslim and some others. So in general, his is very good, and you can benefit a lot from his work.